We gather this hour as people of faith. With joys and sorrows, gifts and needs, we light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning in celebration of the life we share together. We now have our first hymn, hymn number 38, Morning Has Broken. Our first reader this morning is Madeline, and then Patrick will read for us.
I'm reading a really pointless piece this morning, but it just appealed to me. It's one of Robert Fulghum's lovely bits. This one is called Dandelions. Mr. Washington was a hardcore lawn freak. His yard and my yard blended together in an ambiguous fashion. Every year he was seized by a kind of herbicidal mania. He started fondling his weed eater and mixing up vile potions in vats in his garage. It usually added up to trouble. Sure enough, one morning I caught him over in my yard spraying dandelions. "Didn't really think you'd mind," says he righteously. "Mind? Mind? You just killed my flowers," say I with guarded contempt. "Flowers," he riposts, "those are weeds." He points at my dandelions with utter disdain. "Weeds," says I, "are plants growing where people don't want them. In other words," says I, "weeds are in the eye of the beholder. And as far as I am concerned, dandelions are not weeds." "Horse manure," says he, and stomps off home to avoid any taint of lunacy. Now, I happen to like dandelions a lot. They cover my yard each spring with fine yellow flowers with no help from me at all. They mind their business and I mind mine. The young leaves make a spicy salad. The flowers add fine flavor and elegant color to a classic light wine. Toast the roots, grind and brew, and you have a palatable coffee. The tenderest shoots make a tonic tea. The dried mature leaves are high in iron, vitamins A and C, and make a good laxative. Bees favor dandelions and the cooperative result is high-class honey. Dandelions have been around for about 30 million years. There are fossils. The nearest relatives are lettuce and chicory. Formerly classed as perennial herbs of the genus Taraxacum of the family Asteraceae, the name comes from the French for lion's tooth, dent de lion. Distributed all over Europe, Asia, and North America, they got there on their own. Resistant to disease, bugs, heat, cold, wind, rain, and human beings. If dandelions were rare and fragile, people would knock themselves out to pay $24.95 a plant, raise them by hand in greenhouses, and form dandelion societies and all that. But they are everywhere and don't need us, and kind of do what they please. So we call them weeds and murder them at every opportunity. Well, I say they are flowers, by God, and pretty damn fine flowers at that. And I am honored to have them in my yard where I want them. Besides, in addition to every other good thing about them, they are magic. When the flower turns to seed, you can blow them off the stem. And if you blow just right and all those little helicopters fly away, you get your wish. Magic. Or if you're a lover, they twine nicely into a wreath for your friend's hair. I defy my neighbor to show me anything in his yard that compares with dandelions. And if all that isn't enough, consider this. Dandelions are free. Nobody ever complains about your picking them. You can have all you can carry away. Some weed. In the next two pages, he explains how to make wine from dandelions.
Thank you, Madeline, for that. I'm going to make a point of never, ever picking or uprooting dandelions from my allotment. And now that I know I can make wine from them, so much the better. I do enjoy making homemade wine. So, my reading is a little shorter. I have decided to read from Marcus Aurelius, the great Stoic philosopher and Roman emperor, who Edward Gibbon remarked was actually at the helm during the great golden age of classical Rome, and whose son Commodus took over. And of course, those of us who watched Gladiator probably have a, I don't know how accurate it was, saying Commodus was somewhat something of a tyrant. I'm sure some better educated member of the congregation will enlighten me at some stage. But I actually found this rather short, but nonetheless very interesting quote in his Meditations, which says in, I think it's book 12, verse 19, realize at long last that you have within you something stronger and more numinous than those agents of emotion which make you a mere puppet on their strings. What is in my mind at this very moment? Fear, is it? Suspicion, desire, something of that sort. So that's just my reading for the day. I hope you enjoyed it, and it's a thought to carry with us into 2026 with all the problems that that may bring.
One more circle around the sun.
Our next reader is Andrew, and Andrew will be followed by Janet Mulroy.
Morning, everybody. I chose this poem. It's by Seamus Heaney. I very much like Seamus Heaney's poems, and I wanted to find something that was positive, because as bringing something positive, maybe thoughts of positivity into the new year, because I suppose 2025 has not been, for the world, I suppose, hasn't been a great year, with a lot of conflict and a lot of troubles. And sometimes I think, myself included, I get this sense of despair. Is there any possibility of reconciliation or peace or something different? So this poem is called The Cure of Troy, and I've got a little preamble just to give you a little background to it. So The Cure of Troy is a powerful chorus about finding hope and justice amid suffering, adapting ancient Greek tragedy to the Northern Ireland conflict, urging belief in radical change beyond revenge, and suggesting that moments of profound change signal divine acknowledgement of human suffering, allowing for healing and a better future. It contrasts human cruelty with a potential tidal wave of justice and miraculously self-healing, encouraging listeners to look past wrongs towards a further shore of reconciliation. The Cure of Troy. Human beings suffer. They torture one another. They get hurt and get hard. No poem or play or song can fully right a wrong inflicted and endured. The innocent in jails beat on their bars together. A hunger striker's father stands in the graveyard dumb. The police widow in veils faints at the funeral home. History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up, and hope and history rhyme. So hope for a great sea change on the far side of revenge. Believe that a further shore is reachable from here. Believe in miracles and cures and healing wells. Call miracle self-healing, the utter self-revealing, double take of feeling. And if there's fire on the mountain, or lightning and storm, and a God speaks from the sky, that means someone is hearing the outcry and the birth cry of new life at its term. It means once in a lifetime that justice can rise up and hope and history rhyme. Thank you.
Like Patrick, I'm bringing Marcus Aurelius back into the building, and I'm reading from the Daily Stoic. The title is Maintain Composure and Maintain Control. The first few lines are Marcus Aurelius, and then the following is Ryan Holiday. And I think Paul read from this a couple of weeks ago. It's about in my own words, getting back up on that horse, regardless of how many times you might slip or wobble off it. And I found it very encouraging, particularly going into the new year. When forced, as it seems, by circumstance into confusion, get a hold of yourself quickly. Don't be locked out of the rhythm any longer than is necessary. You will be able to keep the beat if you are constantly returning to it. We're going to get caught off guard from time to time, not just by black swan type events, a terrorist attack, or a financial panic, but also by minor, unexpected occurrences. Your car battery dies. Your friend cancels at the very last minute. You suddenly don't feel very well. These situations have a way of throwing us into confusion and disarray. We've made an assumption about the world and built plans on top of that assumption. Now that the assumption has collapsed, so too might our organisation or understanding. That's perfectly okay. It happens. A line of infantrymen will face withering attacks. What's key is that they don't allow the chaos to reign. Musicians will experience technical difficulties and lose their place from time to time. In both cases, it just matters that they get back into position as quickly as is possible. The same is true for us today. The order and the peace might be interrupted by a new circumstance. Okay, get a hold of yourself and find your way back. Thank you.
And now we'll have our second hymn, hymn number 259, We Three Kings of Orient Are, hymn number 259. Our next reader is Trish, and then Monica will follow.
Good morning, everyone. I don't read very often, and I've realised that when I do, I tend to pick very short readings. So here's another one. This is from Ralph Waldo Emerson. To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded.
Good morning. My reading is another from a book about miracles again. It's from Marion Williamson, The Age of Miracles, Embracing the New Midlife. Marion is an internationally acclaimed lecturer and the best-selling author of A Return to Love, among other works. She is a leading teacher in A Course in Miracles. She's involved in extensive charity work, including founding the Peace Alliance, a non-profit grassroots organisation dedicated to fostering a culture of peace. I like her, and this is one of her readings. I think it might be suitable for now. I have edited it. History moves forward one insight at a time, from the Jewish embrace of monotheistic God to Buddha's vision of compassion, from the teaching of Jesus that God is love to Martin Luther's insistence that we can talk to him ourselves, from the individual's creative genius spurred by the Italian Renaissance to the philosophical maturity of the European Enlightenment, from the genius of the American experiment to the invention of quantum physics. The march of armies is creatively small compared to the march of ideas. And that is the purpose of time for both the individual and the species, that as life progresses, our understanding can mature. All of us take two steps forward and one step back at times, but there is nevertheless an evolutionary impulse within every heart, every cell, and every aspect of life, marching ahead despite all resistance. Our task is to consciously conspire with that impulse, in full partnership with the force of love at the centre of all things, entwined with its divine pulsation and heat, both riding and directing the wave by which humanity shall rise up at last. Spiritual transformation, not human manipulation, is the only level fundamentally deep enough to alter the now dangerous trajectory of human history. We can't just fix our way out of what's going on now. We need a miracle, which we will only have if we ourselves become miracle workers. Miracles occur naturally in the presence of love. In our natural state, we are miracle workers because love is who we are. Talk about personal transformation. The journey from fear to love is not a narcissistic exercise. It's not fuzzy thinking or soft-brained New Ageism. It's the most necessary component of our recreating human society and affecting the course of history. Perhaps we will come collectively to the place many of us have been in the privacy of our own hearts, crying out with horror, "Oh God, what have we done?" And as a little prayer, "Dear God, please forgive us for the wounded earth and the needless suffering that afflicts its people today. Intercede on behalf of our better selves and repair the damage done. Replace our fear with hope, dear God, and turn all hate to love. Amen."
Let us pray. Settle yourself down comfortably in the seat. Allow your body to relax and your mind to still in this sacred space. It is our quiet time. We do not speak because the voices are within us. It is our quiet time. We do not walk because the earth is all within us. It is our quiet time. We do not dance because the music has lifted us to this place where the spirit is. It is our quiet time. We rest with all of nature. We wake when the seven sisters wake. We greet them in the sky over the opening of the kiva. Our final two readers this morning are Jennifer Buller and Terry Dixon.
Good morning. Much like Andrew, I was trying to find something positive for today's reading, and I rewatched Burn Before Reading. I don't know if you've seen it, Ethan and Joel Coen movie, and it reminded me of the Ethan Coen poem that I read many years ago here in this church. My computer tells me 2009, but that can't be right because I was living in Italy in 2009. So I don't know when I read it, but it was several years ago. So this is from Ethan Coen, from his book entitled "The Drunken Driver Has the Right of Way." And this is the title poem. The drunken driver has the right of way. The loudest have the final say. The wanton win, the rash hold sway. The realist's rules of order say the drunken driver has the right of way. The Kublai Khan can butt in line. The biggest brute can take what's mine. When heavyweights break wind, that's fine. No matter what a judge might say, the drunken driver has the right of way. The guiltiest feel free of guilt, who care not bloom, who worry wilt. Plans better laid are rarely built, for forethought seldom wins the day. The drunken driver has the right of way. The most attentive and unflailing carefulness is unavailing wheresoever fools are flailing. Wisdom there is held at bay. The drunken driver has the right of way. De jure is de facto's slave. The most foolhardy beat the brave. Brass routs restraint. Low lies, high's grave. When conscience leads you, it's astray. The drunken driver has the right of way. It's only the naivest who'll deny this, that the reckless rule. When facing an oncoming fool, the practiced and sagacious say, "Watch out, one side, Look sharp, gangway. However much you plan and pray, alas, alack, tant pis, oy vey. Now, heretofore, till judgment day, the drunken driver has the right of way.
Good morning. And I have a piece by Mary Elizabeth Cotton, who is a lay leader at the Unitarian Church of the Peninsula in Newport News, Virginia. And it's entitled Deep Listening, which first of all I think is a good summary of what we've all been doing here this morning. But also I think what might be useful if all of us, and indeed everyone in the world, were to do a little bit more of this in 2026. Let us listen. Just for a while, let us silence our minds and open our hearts. Just for a while, let us listen from within. Listen. Not to gain knowledge or to formulate questions, rather to enchant upon sacred bonds and profound wisdom. Just for a while, let us not seek information or answers. Let us not rouse the intellect, but embrace the spirit. If thoughts cloud the brain, may we let them pass. If replies tingle on the tongue, let us breathe them away silently. Return to them later. But here, here in this precious time of sharing, let us listen. Let the words wash over us and seep into a still, quiet pool. Let us listen.
We will now have our third hymn, hymn number 233, Bring a Torch, hymn 233. Grateful thank you to all eight readers who showed up on time and brought thoughtful and insightful readings. Thank you all. Thank you to Ayla for looking after the church and setting it up, to Josh and Gavin for looking after the music, to Thrays for the flowers, to the welcomers Janet Mulroy and Paul Murray, and to Janet, Grania and Daniela for organising coffee. And biscuits would be organised downstairs as usual. On Wednesday, there will be the usual Wednesday thing in the church, and there'll be a service here led by Gavin next Sunday. The really, really important notice is that the gate is closing. If you want to renew your voting membership of the church, you have to contact our treasurer, Rory Delaney, by next Wednesday. When the year runs out, your opportunity to renew your voting membership of the church runs out. So get in touch with him quickly if you haven't already done so. We're now going to have our final hymn, Go Tell It on the Mountain, and it's number 239. The final words come from Mary Oliver. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends upon it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. Go in peace. Amen.